Mehaba Vehosh Geldenes, hello and welcome to our podcast, Talking Round North Cyprus. I'm Sarah Palmer and our very special guest today, Leslie Locke, from whom we'll be hearing in a short while. But before that, a big hello, of course, to my co-host and former BBC colleague. I was going to say sunning himself over there in the TRNC, Rog, but having seen lots of stuff on Facebook, doesn't like you've been doing too much sunning, more sort of, you know, wringing your trousers out.
Yes. Hello, Sarah. Hello, everybody. It's been astonishing. Many people have said, however long they've lived here, they've never known such bad weather as we had last Tuesday. I mean, it's been pretty stormy all week, but on one particular day, it rained for about 24 hours and really, really heavy winds, so that the rain wasn't falling. It was being thrown at you and at windows and people all over. We don't know one couple or person that have got their own property that hasn't had some flooding or some damage in the garden. It's been that bad. And there are reports. I know there was a tornado seen in Iskelly. That's been on Facebook. But the reports here in Lapta that some twisters were coming down the main Lapta Karşıyaka main road. We know that one restaurant has lost its roof. We know another restaurant that was supposed to open on the 1st of February now have to do some repairs before they can consider doing that. There's a place that boards dogs. The dogs were fine, but the owner's sad chihuahuas were killed due to the storm. And one of their ponies had a huge branch stuck in its neck. It's still alive, and we hope it makes a full recovery. Up in Getchikoy, part of the mountain subsided. Homes were flooded. The road was blocked, and very sadly, 200 sheep and cows have been lost, mudslides or just drowned. So it's been really, really serious. And as I say, Sarah, very few places got away without damage or flooding. People certainly found out this week where they've got leaks or where their windows don't fit properly. And a lot of people have spent days just clearing up. I mean, the local bowls club here, we've spoken to Martin, haven't we, quite recently. Loads of mud on the rinks, under 4 inches of water. He said he's never seen anything like it in the 10 years of the club being in existence. So it's been pretty rough all round.
Goodness me, it does sound dreadful. Again, I just sort of saw, you know, I've obviously got friends posting on Facebook, and I know Sarah Wood, who is the travel lady, does her travel programme on Barak International. I mean, she showed a picture of a sign from a supermarket, one of those big sort of neon signs, just crashed into the roof of a car. So, you know, just sort of seeing pictures like that. Goodness me, I mean, I know, you know, we get floods and we get winds here in the UK, but obviously, you know, we sort of feel we're a little bit more solid, if you like, in buildings and things like that. So, I mean, hopefully nobody's, you know, been injured too badly, and hopefully it can all be resolved. I guess that's, I don't know, climate change for you. I mean, odd, isn't it?
Well, it is winter time, let's be fair. Yeah. We boast about our weather. It's winter time. We've had an awful week, but the forecast from next week onwards for the next week and a half is sunshine, temperatures back up to 19 degrees Celsius, my weather app says, and no rain for, you know, a week or two. So This could be, dreadful though it was, this could be our winter, and it's lasted 1 week.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Yes. And again, you know, people then realise how bad it can be and make sort of preparations. But hopefully, as I say, it won't be too bad again. So now then, let's get on to sort of brighter things. Our special guest, Rog. Can I ask, did you meet her in a bar? That's where you usually meet our guests.
Well, of course, actually, it was a restaurant. We went to a party just before Christmas, I think it was, and we had to wear Chris. It was a Christmas jumper party. Having been a professional working musician most of my life, I don't go for live entertainment in great numbers here. You know, whether that's entertainment or not doesn't particularly bother me. I quite just like talking to people when I'm out rather than listening. And we were there, and suddenly this lady started playing the violin. totally and utterly enchanted. She was playing well-known classics, she was playing jazz, she was playing wonderful arrangements of pop classics, including Bohemian Rhapsody. Now, if you've never heard that played on violin, well, you need to. It's just absolutely astonishing. So we were at Sunday lunch last Sunday, and she was playing with a trio. And I just went up to her and I said, look, you know, we do this podcast. Can I talk to you? And she said, yes. So she came round yesterday, did Leslie Locke, and told me about how it all started.
I was given a violin at school whenever I was seven. The school I went to, everybody did an exam to see if they were good enough to play an instrument. And most people played an instrument. And the next year I was in the School of Music, and that was my life. Every day after school, School of Music, Saturday mornings.
When did you know, how soon did you know the violin is going to be your instrument and you can play it?
Well, I played the piano as well and the cello, and everybody went to the School of Music with their instrument. It was just a way of life.
So was it a musical school?
No, it was after school. It was in Century Town.
Okay.
And it was quite good for the whole Protestant Catholic bit, because in Northern Ireland, all the schools are segregated, but the School of Music wasn't. So it knocked any of that rubbish out of you, because you were mixing. You were mixing with the other side automatically, so that was really very good.
And once you realised you were good and you went to School of Music, then what were your ambitions at that point?
To make money. I got a string quartet together at the age of 12, and we were out busking, and we made loads of money. And we were the first string quartet to go down to Dublin. We made loads of money. And then I realised that, yeah, string quartet, that's what I wanted to do. So I led a string quartet for 25 years. No, not always busking. We did tour. We did make albums. We did proper gigs, yes. But yeah, it was the fact of, instead of £2 pocket money, I could nip in after school on the bus. In 20 minutes, I could make, 50 quid.
Wow.
And whenever I went to music college in London, didn't like London very much, but the planes were very expensive to get back for the weekend. I used to go to Tottenham Court Road on a Friday afternoon and make enough for a return flight so I could go home for the weekend.
And is this you on your own or still?
Yeah, this was me on my own, yeah.
And how did you literally perform solo violin, or did you have some kind of backing track at that time?
No, solo violin, because that was well before backing tracks. Yeah. I'm old. And also Tottenham Court Road has the longest elevator, the staircase. So when pound coins had just come out. So all the fellas used to practice rolling their pound coins down to the bottom and hitting you in the face.
Wow.
Yeah, it was dangerous, but it was fun. And it was lots of money. And I thought there was money in music. Wasn't I wrong?
Okay, so what happened there? I mean, did you ever get disillusioned with when you realised maybe you're not going to make a million?
Well, no, I never expected to make a million. And I got lots of work, especially when I was in London, playing freelancing with orchestras and quartets, and went back to Belfast, got married really young. Went back to Belfast, had four kids, and we still were able to support ourselves in a string quartet, doing gigs adequately, and teaching. It was fine.
When you were with the string quartet, what kind of music were you playing? Was it purely classical?
Oh, no. For all the proper concerts, it was classical, but I used to do all the arrangements of pop songs, and we were the first quartet to do pop songs. We were the first string quartet to do Bohemian Rhapsody. It was a mixture of everything.
So how did you, if you like, orchestrate just for four instruments, Bohemian Rhapsody, one of the most complex songs, harmonically as well as anything else?
Maybe because stringed instruments can do more than you think. They can cover any other instrument and two instruments at the same time. And they have better textures and they can do more than you think. They don't just play tunes, they do rhythms. Yeah, it's easy to mix it up and it's really good fun.
So you're back in Ireland, you've got four children.
Yes.
You're still playing.
Yes.
What on earth are you doing in the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus?
Because I got divorced.
Yeah, but that's no reason to come here, is
it? Well, it sort of was, because my husband was in the quartet.
Ah.
So that made life very difficult.
Ah.
And then whenever I got married again, we had a group called Blue Jar. He was a guitarist, and it was a completely different type of band. Guitar, cello, me, and a multi-instrumentalist playing saxophone, keyboards and accordion. and we played gypsy jazz, folk music, classical, and swing. You know, Stephen Capelli.
And where was this?
This was still in Belfast, but we got touring with Peter Gabriel, and we got lots of big opportunities. We recorded two proper albums, and then we got sick of Belfast, and we wanted the sun. And there's more weddings in Paphos than in the whole of Northern Ireland in 1 year. So we moved here 15 years ago to Paphos for the weddings.
So you obviously lived in the south for a long period of time.
Yeah, until last year. I only moved here in the summer.
And so I know everyone's waiting with bated breath. Why did you decide to come north after you had to be happy in the south because you'd been there so long?
No, not at all. The first year was great and there was loads of weddings and there was loads of work, and it wasn't long after the euro had arrived and the pay was quite good. So after the ash cloud, things changed in Cyprus, big time. And because they lost tourism, they put up the prices, so there was less weddings. And then the haircut happened, and for 2 years, everybody was broke. So after the haircut, you could only take out 200 euros in a cash till. That was all businesses. So a pub couldn't pay the staff, they couldn't pay the suppliers, everything closed down. And it never really got back to it. So musicians' fees went down big time, rents went up, and after COVID, it got even more ridiculous. We were in a two-bedroom flat at 370 euros a month. Our Ukrainian landlord wanted us out to move in his Ukrainian family. We started looking. We would have paid 1,700 for exactly the same apartment. That's how expensive it got. And musicians' fees went down. It started off as 150 euros per person and sort of went down to 30.
You can't live on that.
No. So, I'm here.
Okay, can we talk a little bit about COVID? Because that was an extraordinarily difficult time for virtually every person on this planet. Mm-hmm. How bad was it for you as a musician?
It was terrible. We couldn't earn a penny. But we started up a baking business and we sold ginger cakes and lemon drizzle cakes and everything else that gives you heart attacks. And that was quite good. Biggie, you could still buy cakes during COVID. So we were doing about 50 cakes a week. Wow. And it kept us interested. It gave us a bit of an income and it kept a roof over our heads.
I suppose the obvious question for me to ask is what advantage is there being here in the north with all our embargoes, et cetera, to being in the south? The
people are nicer. I've always wanted to be in the north rather than the south, but I thought it was too parochial for work. But it's not. It's fine. But the people are so much nicer. The Brits are nicer and the Cypriots are so much nicer.
And that comes from someone who knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the Cypriots.
So what kind of work are you doing now? Because you are solo now most of the time, aren't you?
Well, no. I play with Hugh O'Neill in The Real Band and I play with Chill Factor, and that's easy listening. And it is brilliant because I've never improvised before and every gig I learn something. And I have so much fun. And they are such nice fellas. And I'm completely out of my comfort zone and love it.
It was interesting, as I was listening at Driftwood at Sunday lunch last week, I heard you improvise and I thought, for a classically trained violinist, that's probably not something you've done a lot of in the past.
No, it's not. And when I never started playing with Hugh. I know I'm Irish, but I've never played Irish music before. He didn't want me using sheet music, so I had to learn it from memory. Now, that's bad enough as well, especially as Irish music isn't the most complicated and you have to remember all the repeats as opposed to the notes.
Yes.
And he made me improvise. But he gave me the confidence to be able to go out and do it. And he threw me in at the deep end. And now Chill Factor threw me in at the deep end every gig, and I love it.
So you mentioned before that you had arranged Bohemian Rhapsody for a string quartet. You now play it solo with backing tracks. Yeah. That must go down incredibly well because it's so unusual.
Sometimes. It depends on the audience. You know, it really does depend on the audience. Some people do not approve of backing tracks at all, and some people do not approve of me not playing classical. So it just depends who you are.
You get that kind of snobbery. You're a classically trained musician. You shouldn't be playing this kind of stuff.
Especially that, yes.
Wow.
But I don't mind. I play a mixture of everything all the time.
What's A really silly question. Well, what's your favourite music? I'm talking about playing, not listening.
It wouldn't be a favourite style. No. Whenever I'm playing with backing tracks, sometimes I feel as though I'm doing karaoke violin. Hmm. But sometimes I don't. So as long as I don't feel as though I'm doing karaoke violin, I'm quite happy. Mm-hmm. As long as it's something challenging and it's not Ed Sheeran.
And what about music to listen to? You put the violin down.
I don't listen to music. Ever. And I find it so annoying whenever I'm at the pub and there's music on because I can't not listen to it. Mm. I can't not criticise it. I can't not think, should I have this in my set? And it's so distracting whenever you just want to talk to people.
Yeah.
So I miss Silver Rocks because you could go and there was never any background music on. So I was never distracted. Yes.
That's extraordinary because I find it exactly the same, especially when I was a full-time musician. When you finish, you just want to switch off and be normal.
Yeah. So, no, I don't listen to music.
OK. And what's being normal to you now?
Oh, I do love quizzes. I love going to a pub quiz. I'm incredibly competitive while the quiz is on. And then I can't even remember who won the next day. But I always play to win.
OK. I'd never been on stage without at least half a pint for Dutch Courage. What about you? Do you stay completely sober?
No. If I'm playing the violin and I don't need to sing, I don't drink. But I need a glass of wine to sing, otherwise I cough. And that's my excuse and I'm sticking to it.
I don't blame you. When did you realise you've got a good voice?
I didn't get a choice. Whenever Blue Jar started, we were told whenever we were recording an album, if it was entirely instrumental, it would never sell. It would never be taken on by a record label. And I was the only fool that volunteered to sing.
Did you go to lessons or did you find you could naturally do it?
I just had to do it. I was in choirs whenever I was a kid, but... But it took me at least 2 years to be able to stand up and sing. I had to hide behind my music stand. Nobody look at me, please.
And now you've got a microphone and you've got no choice.
Yeah. And I still found it fight with the microphone stand.
When you're gigging, and I've only seen you twice, and you've been extremely popular, lots of applause, lots of people nodding and tapping their feet. Tell us about some of the bad experiences, because every musician, however talented, has bad gigs.
There's far more bad ones than good ones. You don't know what people are expecting whenever you walk in to play. They have their own idea of what I am meant to play. And if I don't play it, it's not good. And they're not even remotely subtle about it. Communication's a really good idea, but you send them what you play and they don't look at it and they're still expecting something different. I have more bad gigs than good gigs. And experience doesn't really help. I learn to ask the right questions, but they don't always give you the right answers. Like, if you ask, do you want them to dance? Well, that's up to you. What are you meant to do with that one?
So, if you have more bad than good gigs, I find that hard to believe, but I'll take your word for it. Why do you keep doing it? Because it's no fun when you've got an audience that doesn't want to know.
It doesn't have to be fun. It's a job. Whenever I'm playing on my own, I don't usually enjoy it. I don't really like playing on my own very much. I love playing with other people to bounce off, and then I don't actually care what the reception is. The audience are ignored. But if you're playing on your own, the only thing you can focus on is the audience. And you know the stuff inside out, and your mind wanders, and if you see people are not clapping, you turn off, and then I start playing things I don't know very well, so at least it gives me a bit of a challenge. Mm. It's not great, but it's a job, and it's a better job than most, and it's better paid than most. At least I'm not working in a factory for peanuts.
What about the future then, Leslie? You're going to keep doing this, playing solo, playing with people? How do you see the next few years?
Well, I really want to get into a string quartet. Now, I have heard that there's a female trio. I haven't managed to meet up with them yet, and I'm hoping to persuade them that they really need another violin to make it into a quartet. And I've also heard about the orchestra in Lefkosia, and I'm interested in that. And I'm making noises about trying to audition for that. But yes, I love it here. I love the sea, I love the mountain, I love the weather, I love the people, and I'm quite happy. I don't need to be rich. I just need to be able to pay my bills.
The supremely talented Leslie Locke. And if you want to book Leslie for a function, she's got a Facebook page. You just search for Leslie Locke, and it's Locke with an E, L-O-C-K-E. Great story, Sarah, and, you know, 14 years in the South, she only enjoyed the first one and now loves it up here in the North.
Yeah, lot to be said for that. And you must have felt you had lots in common with her. I mean, you mentioned before we heard from Leslie that, you know, you know that you were an entertainer, a performer yourself. I mean, did some of the stuff that she said resonate with you? You know, the fact that sometimes you're up there playing and you realise that nobody's listening, but you just sort of enjoy it anyway?
Well, yes, although she said she has a lot more bad gigs than good gigs, and she explained why. I certainly hadn't experienced that, but bad gigs are something that I found very hard to take. But I was always in a band. I was never solo, so a band or an orchestra. So if there was any pain, it was shared around, so to speak. But, yeah, I resonate with her when she said, once I've played, that's the job. I've done my playing. Now I just want to talk to people and have a good time. I don't need music. Again, you know, there has to be a switch off time. And I found that, I was nodding my head a lot during that interview.
I'm sure you were. It's a bit like working on the radio. When I get in the car, I don't need the radio on. I just turn the radio off because you're just like, I've had this all day in my head, you know, whatever. So might there be a duet on the cards? Do you imagine sort of playing your piano with her and her violin?
Well, sadly, in our little holiday apartment here, there's no room for my baby grand piano that I've got in my villa in Iskelly. But we are moving out here this side of the island in April. And the place we've got has plenty of room for at least a piano. So, yeah, I would love...
Brilliant.
I would love to accompany her, Leslie. And she plays so many different styles, you know. She's such an amazing all-round, a master of all of them. So, I hope that happens one day. And same with Laura from the Wine Bar, who we interviewed. She's a fabulous singer. I would love to work with her as well. Not work with her, just do a gig. You know, I can't get paid because I haven't got a license and I don't want to earn money. But it's great. Laura could just buy me a bottle of wine and I'll be quite happy to work all night for that.
Yeah, that's right. And then we'll show your versatility as well once you get going. But you are
playing the piano and drinking wine at the same time. I'll work on that one.
You work on that one, but you are an incredible pianist and very versatile as well. So I would love to be at that gig. That would be great fun. So if you would like to find out more about Leslie, that's Leslie Locke with an E, do look out her Facebook page. So thank you again for listening. You can get in touch with us lots of different ways. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Talking Round North Cyprus. And if you've got a lovely story like Leslie has and you'd like to get in touch and chat with us, do drop us an email, trnc.podcast@gmail.com. I'm Sarah Palmer.
And I'm Roger Barr. Let's talk again very soon.